I'm John Batchelor. Overclassification. In the news in the United States these last weeks and months, reports of several administrations and several participants in those administrations in possession of documents that are said to be classified, or that it is irregular for them to be outside the purview of the National Archives. Question of secrecy comes immediately to bear, and sometimes it involves law enforcement. However, my colleague, Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, on his website, you will find that he's been conducting meetings since April of 2020 by various groups of distinguished people from government work, from the Congress, from classification systems, from the military, over many months to discuss overclassification in American life, said to weigh down upon the ability of the government to access what it needs at the time and to be effective for national security and elsewhere. Certainly, the troubles with the previous administrations now, the very least embarrassment. Henry, a very good evening to you. I need to start with history. Where did this come from? Because I assure you, there was no overclassification system during the Civil War when Abraham Lincoln, the president, would stroll over to the telegraphic office at the War Department and sit and learn of reports from the battlefield with a room full of cluttering clerks listening in on the reporting. So we know it wasn't there in 1863 when the nation was at risk. Where did it come from that it now weighs on the 21st century? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, I am not a studied student of this, but roughly the wars, the first and the second, exponentially increased the interest of the government in protecting information to conduct the military operations. And although there was an enormous relaxation after the First World War, much of this practice ramped up again in the second. And I think the nuclear energy, that's sort of the connection between my operation and this issue, substantively, put a rather large amount of icing, if you will, on top of this bureaucratic cake, because it seemed now that wars would go very quickly and be extremely destructive. And therefore, the powers of the presidency had to be amped up even further. And his ability to control information, particularly with regard to things related to nuclear war, became very, very pronounced. We are still in the shadow of that set of concerns in the way we operate our government and the way we protect information. And so, the war on terror added another layer, you could argue. And I think it, in many respects, it didn't help. But where we are now is with a rather elaborate and I think less than agile system that doesn't just classify what needs to be classified. This is not an argument against keeping secrets, but it goes overboard. And in going overboard, it used to be, I guess, initially somewhat tolerable. I mean, I worked in the Pentagon, and to be honest, part of the reasons for this project were some of the personal encounters I had with some of the less than brilliant application of the system. I kind of tolerated it as, you know, sort of what citizenship suffers when it does public service. But I think I got a taste or two of some applications that were more than just less than brilliant. I think they were surreal and potentially dangerous. And when I started talking with others, I found that their stories were far worse than mine. And I started to get, I said, this is serious. This is frightening. I'm just a private citizen now, but I found that it was pretty easy not only to raise money, but to get other people who were much more senior in their service than me to talk. And that's how this series got started.
Let's give a specific example rather than speaking of nuclear war or what we have today,
information war.
What is the NGA and what did the NGA discover about its classification systems and what did it do about it?
Well, and one of the people I was talking to worked on the Hill, had served in Afghanistan. He told me a terrific story, which I validated, that when they were fighting with our Afghan allies, they constantly needed pictures of where the positions of the enemy were, Taliban. And they would apply to get the images from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which is in charge of distributing such information. And they would find, A, it took a long time, and B, it would come stamped with the classification no foreign, which is code for no foreigners can see this. They couldn't use it. What did they do? They dug into their own private pockets to buy commercial unclassified imagery of the same area, and that's how they managed to get through the war. Now, NGA knew that this was going on and was actually, to their credit, disturbed by this because they realized, oh my gosh, we're going to go out of business. People are going to use the commercial imagery and they're going to ignore us. We won't be able to add value and have a business. So they went about, I think it was in 2016, trying to understand why things were operating so poorly for the people on the front line. And they came to the conclusion very quickly that they had too many classification guidebooks. They had 65 of them that they were operating on because the NGA was a collection of, was created out of a collection of other agencies that had just carried their guidebooks and they were operating with these things. And it was pretty obvious that no one, no matter how bright or studious they might be, could refer to 65 guidebooks, particularly if they were different.
I'm going to guess, Henry, that those 65 guidebooks were written by people who had no idea of 5G, the internet, and that we can all see everything all the time thanks to the satellites. No idea that world was coming.
Well, you know, or insufficient attention to this, that if you have different guidance, all of the guidance collectively gets ignored. And what you do instead is to say, I don't know what the heck I'm supposed to do, so let's just classify it. That should be good enough for government work. Well, it wasn't. And they realized that they had to consolidate all 65 down to one book. They had to get rid of the subjective and contradictory guidance, which they did. And they had to have an appeal process that was quick, that would wire brush the guidebook they had continually. Under normal regulations in the Pentagon, you're only required to review your guidance once every 5 years. Well, they were reviewing their own consolidated guidance once every 5 weeks, as best I can tell. And you had to reach a decision on an appeal within 30 days. In the Pentagon, frequently, a review can take 5 years or more. So, long story short, NGA went a different way, and they saved themselves as an institution and started adding value and getting product not only to frontline fighters, but to allies, to innovators and private firms. Because what they did is they lowered the classification so that they could share the information necessary to do the tasks of common defense.
We now have established the problem in one small piece of the U.S. government. It comes from nuclear war. It moves into the age of information war. And it hobbles not only kinetic warfighting, but people who want to access information about that battle once upon a time. It's classified forever unless you declassify it. So we're going to turn to recommendations that are in these policy workshops over 3 years from the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. The first place we're going to look is Congress. Henry Sikorski, the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.